Hello and welcome to the Digital Euro podcast. I'm your host Valentin, and in this episode I had the chance to sit down with Cam Dillon and Alan Pedersen from Eurodollar. We explore the evolving role of stablecoins issued in the EU, including Eurodollar's USDE, and discuss the impact of the markets in crypto assets regulation, or MiCAR, which is set to shape the future of crypto assets in Europe. Eurodollar is a fintech innovator behind USDE, a digital dollar made in Denmark, EU-passported, and fully regulated under MiCAR. Built on principles of safety first, fairness, and transparency, their mission is to bring traditional finance on-chain, starting with their stablecoin USDE and a money market bond USDI. Alan, before we deep dive, can you walk us through Eurodollar's mission, how its key products such as USDE and USDI are designed to meet market demands?
Thank you very much for having us. Of course, I'm happy to tell you about that. With Eurodollar, we're trying to create a very safe liquidity solution on-chain that should allow as a base layer for a lot of the TradFi markets to start moving on-chain. We focus particularly on this set of problems that are in moving basically capital markets and other markets on-chain, and found one of the key constraints there has been, let's call it the quality of currency or how safe it is. So our focus is like a safety-first liquidity solution. And that entails everything from how we think about the agreements and the regulatory frameworks, how we think about capital, how we think about technology, all these different parts, and even liquidity. So our first product in this sort of line, because we expect this sort of safety first to drive us to more and continually improve the products, the two first products we start with is USDE, which is a regulated stablecoin issued out of Denmark, that is US dollar pegged, and USDI, which is a money market bond and is designed to pair up with the stablecoin so people have a chance to move seamlessly between the two. So if you need to do a transaction, you can use the stablecoin. If your money is at rest, well, you can, you know, you're not using them, but you need to keep them liquid, you can use USDI and gain some sort of money market yield on it. And then they can easily move between each other, and they're all within EU regulation and so on. So it gives a nice sort of safe place to start.
Maybe a follow-up question to you, Alan. You mentioned liquidity. That's very important. Why is that? How important is it for you?
Well, I mean, for us, liquidity is, so I think this is a bigger question about liquidity, as in what we believe is that a lot of the products that are coming on chain, like RWA tokens and many other tokens, what's important is that people are able to buy these products instantly with a on-chain currency and also get out of these products with an on-chain currency. And that's where we're focused a lot on in our problem solving, how to allow for that. So we think this liquidity is a material part. In fact, before this liquidity stuff is truly solved, as in how to have a good liquidity layer of a high enough quality, it's hard to see the TradFi markets truly moving on chain. It's material to us. But that's sort of the what liquidity problems are we solving. On the other end, you might say, what liquidity problems or things do we have internally? Because, of course, you know, our tokens needs to be able to be moved off, right? You need to be able to move in and out of fiat. And there we have some solutions with banks. And we're also trying to make various other solutions that makes it easy for you to move in and out of our stablecoin with other key tokens in key markets that we focus on.
Thank you, Alan. Maybe moving to the regulatory side of this, a question for Cam. MiCAR introduces strict requirements for stablecoin issuers, including reserve management and redemption rules. What have been the biggest hurdles for Eurodollar in ensuring compliance, and how have you navigated these?
Yeah, I think it's good to have a framework like MiCA, given that we are kind of very much in the early stages of having this type of legislation, which is a really good thing. There have been some challenges to be expected. I think one of the core challenges we've faced is connecting into the traditional banking system and being able to integrate and secure the right services. I think, as I was saying, MiCA is kind of, you know, ahead of its time, which is excellent. I think what we need to see is sort of adjustment within the industry to take that into account. For example, now stablecoin issuers are regulated entities, whereas the risk appetite for the banking system, for example, traditional banks and services that you'd need to use may not have adjusted their risk appetite to account for that. And so we've really navigated that by trying to find the right partners who understand digital assets, what we are trying to build, and the actual risk that might really sit beneath that, so that that can then be reviewed and measured.
Thank you, Cam. Going back to Alan, Eurodollar chose to issue a USD-pegged stablecoin while being headquartered in Europe and building on European infrastructure. What was the reasoning behind this decision, and how does it align with Eurodollar's long-term vision under MiCA?
We choose to issue a US dollar-pegged stablecoin because we think the international payment infrastructure is built around the US dollar or US-denominated currencies today, or US-denominated assets. So we decided to focus on US dollar. We need to disconnect the two, like what's it pegged against versus who's actually sort of monitoring and overseeing and what regulation are you within. So we were very pro the MiCA regulation that came out, as Cam just explained. And yeah, we thought if you can issue a dollar here from Denmark or Europe, we thought this was the best way of marrying two great things. As in, you know, you have the international payment system that is somewhat US dollar derived, and then you have a great European stable regulation. So that was really it for why to choose that. Yeah.
Question for Cam on the USD pegged stablecoin part. Cam, do you see a difference in terms of regulation of issuing a USD pegged or euro denominated stablecoin inside Europe? Is it a difference there in terms of regulatory framework or the steps before you issue these?
In terms of process and being an issuer, I don't think the process differs in terms of becoming regulated to issue a USD or a euro-pegged stablecoin. So I think that's kind of has been dealt with in a fairly balanced way. The parameters and that apply to whether you're euro-pegged or US dollar is quite different. And I think that there's probably differences, material differences in that regard.
Staying on the regulatory side, Cam, what is your opinion on MiCA introducing the significant stablecoin classification, which comes with additional oversight? Do you think this creates an uneven playing field between large and small entities and issuers?
So in my view, having additional regulatory oversight for significant stablecoins is not necessarily, I don't think that inherently creates an uneven playing field. I do think that there's some thinking to be done around at what point should a stablecoin constitute a significant stablecoin. So, you know, does it pose a risk to the financial system? And I think some of the levels that might be set out in MiCA today could perhaps be given more thought or readjusted as we see the industry go and as we assess, you know, the kind of risk that they really present. And at what point, as I say, should they constitute significant stable coins? I think if they really pose a risk to the financial system, then additional oversight can be helpful. So I do think, however, having the same regulatory burden on large and smaller issuers can pose a challenge or an uneven playing field, in the sense that, you know, they don't have the same resources and also they don't pose the same level of risk. So I think if those parameters are appropriate in terms of how they regulate the different size issuers, that they can be helpful. I think there's probably more advancement that we can achieve with Amica as we see the industry grow.
Thank you for the input, Cam. Maybe moving beyond this stablecoin discussion only, Alan, beyond USDE, Eurodollar is also launching USDI, the money market bond product you mentioned at the beginning. Can you explain how USDI works and how it fits into Eurodollar's broader product suite?
Sure. You know, it's good to think about them in a pair format. So you've got USD, the stablecoin, you've got USDI, which is sort of a money market bond, where the underlying assets is a variety of money market funds from large financial institutions. If you think about the role of money, you could say there's store value and there's sort of currency of exchange, as in basically some of them needs to store value and you need to also be able to exchange between parties. So, you know, I give you one asset, you give me something, and there's that exchange. Now, for something like the USD for our stable coin, that's the exchange version, right? That's our idea that people who need to exchange something, they always need to have something very safe that they can exchange with other people. And that's what we're trying to create in USD, and we'll continue to do that. For USDI, it's more focused on the store of value, as in saying, okay, I need something liquid, but for the time being, I just need to park my money here and make sure that they are safe and make sure that they are providing a money market yield. Now, we've done something extra. That's why it's in a bond format, because we've also said, okay, because they are connected so well, we've created a situation where part of the yield that is underlying the assets of the stablecoin are also being provided to the USDI, to the money market bond. So the owners of the money market bond receive the returns of all the underlying assets of the money market bond, plus a large part of the returns from any assets underlying the stablecoin, meaning that the money market bond should essentially deliver more than a money market fund, given that there is a sizable outstanding of the USD. So that was to make that an interesting product for people to be in. And then, yeah, making sure that you can go in and out. So we have this great platform for people to say, I want to go into crypto, I want to stay in crypto, I want to stay liquid, so I have a safe stable coin to make exchanges with, to buy things with, get out of things with, and I have a place to park it that provides some money market related returns. As mentioned earlier, it is both of them within EU, and that sort of gives people this safety of everything being in the same legal arrangement or regulatory scheme that makes it easy to, you know, make sure you're safe. So it's a great starting point for that.
Follow-up question on the target audience, let's say. How do you foresee people using it? Are you looking more at business customers, TradFi, or maybe a retail investors using the stablecoin and the USDI bond product?
Well, I think we're going to have a sort of a two-pronged user base, if you like. On one hand, you know, a lot of stablecoin business today is wholesale based, you know, as in it's going out to other parties who's handling the connection to end customers. We think this platform that we start from with USD and USDI and the way we're connecting with exchanges and others gives actually some of the direct consumers a really great place to start. So we hope to build out a direct to consumer or direct to small businesses part, because we think as you start seeing that happening, that's actually one of the precursors for seeing the overall TradFi market to start moving to an on-chain world. So we'll focus on that. But then the other side to it, the let's call it the wholesale side, there is sort of a standard part of it, which is, okay, you need to work with the following market makers to make sure things are happening on various exchanges and so on. That's fine. We have to do that. But otherwise, in the wholesale market, we're trying to see if there are specific problems that we can start solving that we think can help move things from TradFi to on-chain. And one of them, one of the big ones is securities that are going on-chain or RWA tokens that are going on-chain. How to work with them to make sure that it's advantageous for people to trade these in using our stablecoin and having this sort of, you know, money parking lot of USDI, if you like. So we focus on those, and then we may also focus more on sort of the FX problems that exists between, you know, US dollars, euros, pounds, and other currencies on chain. But we, in the wholesale market, try to focus on specific problems that we think will aid in moving the market to an on-chain world.
Thank you, Alan. Maybe a last question on the adoption to just get the perspective. We understand that the product is very focused also on business and wholesale. Do you foresee these the stablecoin product being used in DeFi, as we can see with USDC or Tether, something similar happening?
Yeah, we can. I mean, we hope to see some adoption there. It's, you know, the even today there's too many sectors to focus on all the time. So some of these markets are going to be, let's call it residual adoption. We're going to push for adoption for a certain set of customers that we outlined before and certain use cases that we outlined before. And then if those adoptions, you know, as in, for instance, it's a good idea for you to move in and out of the following securities using our stablecoin because it's more liquid, fine. That may then, the residual, that may be that, okay, if this security is being used often in places like DeFi, well, then basically there is adoption in DeFi. So it's more if we solve specific liquidity problems in specific areas, the demand for it, because it's the most efficient way of doing certain things, sort of comes natural. So it's not like we're targeting specifically DeFi. We're specifically targeting solving certain key problems of moving certain key transaction types from TradFi on-chain.
Thank you, Alan. I will jump to Cam with a question on the regulatory side. Since Eurodollar is regulated in Europe, it is a USD-pegged stablecoin. Do you see the competitive edge of being issued in Europe, regulated in Europe, when we see the coin being issued on the market compared to the other offerings around the globe currently?
Yeah, we definitely do. We feel that being within an advanced regulatory system, legal framework, most certainly gives us an edge. And one of our core values has been building something of high quality that people can rely on, that is safe and trustworthy. And we really think that that comes from being within a regulated framework in a jurisdiction like the EU. So we most definitely see the value there.
Another question for you, Cam, on the regulatory side. Meeker mandates high reserve and prudential standards for stablecoin issuers. How does Eurodollar ensure compliance while maintaining operational efficiency?
So we seek to understand what the requirements are of us, make sure that we're quite clear about those. It sounds like a very obvious thing to say, but I think sometimes things can be interpreted. So we, you know, interpreted differently. So we've taken, you know, a good amount of time to make sure that we understand what is expected of us. And then we've sought to create operational efficiencies within our processes, whether that's account management, automation in terms of the way systems are integrated. And I think it will be an ongoing process. It will be an iterative process. I think even as Mika changes, the industry changes, is something we'll seek to stay on top of and, you know, gain efficiencies as things evolve also.
talking about efficiency, there is this term algorithmic stablecoins, and I have a question for Alan on that topic. Algorithmic stablecoins often face skepticism on the regulatory frameworks like MiCAR. What's Eurodollar's stance on this? And do you see a future for algorithmic designs compliant with MiCAR?
Well, I guess it's not where we focus so much, I think, as in the algorithmic end. We don't really see clearly how this can be done in a way that takes care of all the various risks that might be there, and disaster scenarios and so on. So we are skeptical about just like the framework about algorithmic stablecoins. I think, to be frank, the biggest market opportunity is that we use the technology to move TradFi on-chain. That's where we will see the financial system become more efficient, change from one state to another state. That's that state change we want to bring about. Now, that state change is going to have to, you know, one part of that state change is going to be, you know, a key part of that is the stablecoin or the liquidity or the currency that is being used here. And it's our belief that we need to make that as safe as possible, because we basically, you know, we don't see people moving. We don't see the whole system moving without that. Our focus, as hopefully come through this podcast also, that we really focus on trying to create safety. We're following the regime and the regulation that exists to give people comfort and safety. We try to add on top of that. We hope over time it'll be even more that comes in there, so you can provide even further safeties and other types of things to it. And that gets to a place where banks and other parties and regulations like Basel or bank regulations that says, okay, it's okay to use this. It's okay to put it on our balance sheet. That's how the transition happens. I don't think at this moment that transition is going to happen in the algorithmic end. It's going to happen in this end. As in, how do we fundamentally get the on-chain currencies or liquidities move further up towards, let's call it, you know, central bank money, or better than bank money, or as good as bank money, as in up the pyramid of sort of the hierarchy of money. That's where we need to move. It's not the other road, and that's why this is first version of our stablecoin. We'll try and make improvements on it all the time, so we continually move with quality higher and higher up the curve, because that's the only way we're going to see the move of TradFi to on-chain.
Let's touch again for a final round of questions on the regulatory camp. What is your perspective on the absence of regulatory equivalence regime in MiCAR? Could we see a fragmentation in how stablecoins are treated across different jurisdictions?
I think it's a double-edged sword. I think there's a real opportunity for Europe in having been kind of leading the way and setting out a stablecoin regulatory framework. And that really positions it quite uniquely to foster innovation and drive forward kind of the digital initiatives, which is where, in our view, that the world is going, really, in many different industries. I think that in the longer term, if there isn't another regime or equivalent regimes, that could lead to an industry that is fragmented. I think digital assets, on-chain activity is inherently a global thing. I think we live in a globalized world. So I think we would benefit from international standards, if not directly equivalent regimes, something similar to as we see with the Basel Committee in the banking system, to have a committee that sets recommendations and guidelines and ultimately international standards for all stablecoin issuers to comply with. And then I think that will really facilitate global growth, which is really good for everybody, in my view.
A follow-up question on maybe recent developments. For you, Cam, we saw that the United States has put CBDCs on the side and focused a lot more on stablecoins. Do you see this as a positive move for the whole industry? And are we in Europe benefiting more from this move? Can we use it as a competitive edge?
big question. I think it's a signal to the market for the value that private stablecoin issuers have. I think we often see innovation, entrepreneurship flourish in the private sector. And I think that can then lead for opportunity for collaboration between private issuers and CBDCs.
Thank you, Cam. And as we're approaching the end of our podcast, I would like to thank both of you and ask you for a final words where people can find you. Do you have any recent news or new products? The stage is yours.
We're obviously Eurodollar. We can be found at www.eurodollar.fi, but our website is coming soon. So please look out for that in the next couple of weeks. We will have a new website up that will have all the details about USDE, our stablecoin, and USDI, the money market bond. So we're very excited about that. In the meantime, you can find us on LinkedIn, and we are also on X.
Alan, final words?
Only to say thank you very much for having Eurodollar on the podcast. You guys do a great job at the association, and we look forward to work with you on many other things over the coming years, really. And yeah, we think we're at a great point in time where really we are starting to see a move of TradFi to an on-chain system. And well, we look forward to be part of that and look forward to, you know, operate or work with a lot of your listeners in doing that a lot. We are trying to be an open system or an open coin at least. So we look forward to work with a lot of the listeners. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was my conversation with Cam and Alan from Eurodollar, diving deep into how they're bridging TradFi and crypto with safety-first stablecoin solutions under Europe's evolving regulatory framework. You'll find all relevant links to Eurodollar in the show notes. Thank you for tuning in.